Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Folks, we all know that the U.S. Participated in targeted strikes on Fordow Fuel Enrichment Plant, the Natanz Enrichment Complex, and the Isfahan Nuclear Technology Center in Iran, three different locations, bunker buster bombs and other missiles fired from a submarine as well. And this begs the question now, what next? Here to talk to us about is Dr. Michael Wallace, 20-year Navy veteran, counterterrorism expert, and a professor at Tulane University. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Noel. Pleasure to be here.
So there's always this question when you take these preemptive strikes and trying to eliminate a threat that Iran has that they could participate in. Let's start with that. Your thoughts.
Going back when I was a brand new naval intelligence officer, one of the first jobs I had was looking at Iranian special forces. And I've been looking at Iran for a number of years through a number of different jobs. And I can say that allowing Iran to get a nuclear weapon would be a very bad idea, not just for Israel in the Middle East, but also here in the United States. So I'm pleased about what happened, the U.S. actions. I think it was a tremendous success, both militarily and more importantly, keeping this whole operation a secret is very impressive.
So obviously it comes with risk, right? And there's been a lot of saber rattling and a lot of rhetoric that's been coming out by the Iranians. What is their capacity at this point? And I know what the president has asked for is an unconditional surrender. They have surrendered in the past. I wouldn't say it was unconditional, but they have that move in their bag to come back to the diplomatic table and negotiate because they've done it before.
Exactly. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. They're trying to figure out what they want to do right now. They have options. If they want to take, if they see their regime is starting to fall or they're concerned that they may lose power, you may see them try to restrict access at the Strait of Hormuz. The Houthis in Yemen have already said that they're going to attack shipping. You might see proxies in the Middle East attack U.S. forces in Israel. And then, a lot of people forget that in 2020, after in the first Trump administration, when they killed Soleimani, the Iranians actually launched ballistic missiles against U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. So they have options. Now, the next 48 to 72 hours are going to be pretty important about deciding which way Iran is going to go. If they decide that they have nothing to lose and they're concerned about losing power, you're going to see a lot of strikes in the area. If they want to come back to the table and try to save whatever they can of remaining in power, maybe some nuclear power capability, I think what you'll see are strikes like what you saw in 2020 with ballistic missile strikes against U.S. forces or something along that line. Again, to save face and de-escalate things and have them return to the table.
So it's kind of a wait and see. Everyone's a lot of what's been being talked about is really conjecture, right, relative to what Iranian intent may be, which is the same way. And I'm sure you've, as your service in the military, you had to delve into intelligence information and draw what you could from that. I kind of chuckle when I listen to some of the mainstream media doing these interviews as though this intelligence information reveals itself in a clear and concise manner. Your thoughts?
Exactly. You know, one thing that, especially during Operation Iraqi Freedom, one thing that I tried to instill in my intelligence specialists was there's always what we used to call a 24-hour rule. In combat, it's a little different, but the 24-hour rule that when you get a report, wait 24 hours because things are going to change. And this is kind of the same thing. Depending on where you go to get your information, and there's a lot of open source information out there. There are a lot of good sites, both on Twitter and other places, where you can go to these open source sites, and they have a really good capability of scraping the internet for anything that deals with Iran and Iran strikes and Israel and things like that. You know, there's a lot of different stuff that's coming out right now. You see that both Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is in Gaza, they strongly condemned the attacks. However, Hezbollah also condemned the attacks, but they also told Israel that, hey, we're not going to get involved. Iran has made some different comments. Before the strike, they said they would strike here within the continental United States and other places where U.S. forces are located. And now it just depends on where you go to get your information, what they're saying. Again, if they decide to go all out and launch strikes, then we'll know. And they're going to be dealt with severely by both the Israelis and the U.S. If they decide they're going to do a couple of strikes, call it a day, and want to come back to the table, we'll know that they're more interested in staying in power.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We're visiting with Dr. Michael Wallace, 20-year Navy veteran, counterterrorism expert, professor at Tulane. A lot of folks, I think, are very confused about enriched uranium, U-235, and what it actually means. My understanding is that there's really not many uses for enriched uranium at the 60% level. And it's a lot easier to get from 60% to 90% as opposed to getting from, I think it's at 0.7% in its natural form, uranium enriched, which for nuclear power, it only requires 3 to 5% enriched uranium of U-235. So there's really not much purpose of having 60% uranium sitting around out there for the most part, other than for testing and for scientific experiments or otherwise, or to easily move to weapon-grade uranium enrichment, right?
You're absolutely correct. They're running a nuclear reactor for peaceful power, power means, supplying power to areas and cities and things like that. You will not enrich uranium. Enriching uranium only happens when you want to build a weapon. And that's why you see all these, when you hear about centrifuges, and they actually have to spin the uranium to get it to a level that they can use it in weapons. And you were talking about the 60% and the 90%. That's exactly, As you mentioned, it's very easy to take 60 to 90. It takes a lot longer to take unenriched uranium to that 60%. So this is very important to Iran, is keeping as much enriched uranium as they can if they want to continue down this road of making an atomic weapon. So you're absolutely correct. It's go ahead.
Now, well, I was going to ask along these lines. So when you're looking at intelligence information, also what I'm kind of mystified by the approach of many national correspondents is they want to focus just simply on the enriched uranium and not even consider the fact that they have a very vibrant, aggressive ballistic missile program that's going on, as well as an ICBM program that's going on. And in my research, the Iranians would be able to move from 60% enriched uranium to 90% enriched uranium in less than a month. And when you combine these two factors together, it does, you know, if the delivery system needs to be developed and you see that they're aggressively doing that and you know that in less than a month they could get to the 90% enriched uranium, when you put all of these pieces and parts together in an intelligence report, are there many other conclusions that you can reach other than that there's an intent and a desire to create a nuclear weapon? I mean, am I missing something here?
No. Again, you hit the nail on the head with the fact that they can make a nuclear weapon, but also they can deliver it. And that's, you know, you have to have those two parts. Another example is looking at North Korea. North Korea, they do have nuclear weapons. And what the Indo-Pacific Command is really concerned about are their ICBMs and how they're developing. They have ICBMs. They've been testing ICBMs. And that's a big concern because there's a concept. You've probably heard of Homeland Security, and that's where Homeland Security is protecting the United States against threats, whether they be natural, like hurricanes, forest fires and things like that, or terrorist attacks or things like that. But Homeland Security, you have civilian agencies that have the lead. So civilian federal agencies have the lead, FBI, terrorism, things like that. But there's a concept of Homeland Defense, and that is where you have either so many different disasters going on at the same time that overwhelms civilian agencies and authorities, or you have a peer-on-peer conflict. For example, if China invades Taiwan, they're going to do everything they can to prevent our forces here in the United States from being able to go into the theater to protect Taiwan. The ICBMs, that's the same kind of thing, and that's what NORAD and U.S. Northern Command has been concerned with for a long time. You know, we have gotten very complacent here in the United States, thinking that the wars are always overseas. They're not here. And unfortunately, the next conflict is probably going to be here. And the ICBM is just one of the threats that we're facing. Cyber is a big one. We have lone wolves. We have, you know, possible fifth column, countries put fifth column forces here in the United States waiting to strike. So there's a lot going on, but the ICBMs is just one part of this whole focus that the government is putting on Homeland Defense now.
Well, it was kind of the same reaction, and I hate to keep saying mainstream media, but it's like their focus is, I'm not sure what they're focusing on. When the Trump administration was talking about the Golden Dome, it was almost as if ICBM technology was not in the hands of anybody else but the three major powers, Russia, China, and the U.S. And we know that to not be true, right?
That's correct. And again, you have done your homework on this, and it's great talking with you because you have done your homework. You understand the basic issues of what's going on. But I think the mainstream media, a lot of times they're looking for that sensational click, I guess you could say, and they don't understand what's going on. They don't understand these weapons. They don't understand how they work. They don't understand the threat that comes with them. And, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer or the negative guy here, but we just need to do more to understand the threat and to explain that threat, not cause people to get, you know, afraid, but actually be able to talk to the U.S. population in a way where they are aware of these threats, they know about these threats, and they're better educated about these threats. Because, again, mainstream media, they're interested in well, I'm trying to put this nicely, but they're after the buck, you know.
Well, the thing that concerns me is that I've not really heard a robust conversation about the following. You know, the question is, what's next, right? And it's almost as if we've narrowed this down to what's next only because of the action that we've taken over the weekend with the bombing of these nuclear facilities within the territorial confines of Iran. But what's next has been looming out there before this event, right? And what's next has always been a threat to us. It's almost is that we put this in the category of this is a new threat, but that's not true. This is a threat that we've been facing for years. And the Iranians have killed thousands upon thousands of U.S. citizens and soldiers and otherwise over the years. So the what next has been there all along. I think that there's a line of thinking, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to go out on a limb here. They're very much in a communication distress position and in a response diminish position as a result of what the Israelis have done and what the U.S. has done. For them to carry out the what next threat that's existed before this event would have been easier a week ago for them than it would be today, I would think. Your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, the Iranians have lost, and again, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about the Iranian government. They've lost face on this. They, you know, for years, the common consensus is that Israel and the United States would never take on Iran in taking out its nuclear program because of the Iranian threat of ballistic missiles raining into Israel. You had proxy forces like Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas and PIJ in Gaza that would launch rockets and cause conflict with Israel. So Israel would be kept busy. But what's happened in the last 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks now, is amazing. The Israelis have shown some incredible intelligence and incredible strikes that they've done. The U.S. has followed that up, taking care of things that the Israelis couldn't. And so Iran's in a very unique position because they don't know what to do. The world is now looking at this, especially China and Russia. And you notice that China and Russia have not really run in and say, hey, stop this, or we support Iran, because, you know, Iran's defenses were taken out like they were nothing. Granted, the Israelis did a lot of work to make sure that these defenses were taken out. But, you know, these countries that have these old systems, older systems, maybe relics of the Soviet Union or Russian systems, you know, I think a lot of countries are going to be looking at their systems going, huh, well, maybe we're not as invincible as we thought we were.
We know that the Iranians have been producing and providing and delivering to the Russians drones for many years now. They've stepped up that production of same to the benefit of the Russians in their fight against the Ukrainians. It doesn't surprise me that the foreign minister from Iran is saying that they're going to go visit with the Russians. That has some downstream implications too, right? Because if my memory serves me correct, a lot of the Arab nations are not really warm and fuzzy with the Russians by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and it's been kind of an up and down relationship. You know, you could look at Egypt and their relationship with the Soviet Union and the Russians over the years. But yeah, if Iran has done that, Iran has quite a indigenous weapons industry. They have reverse engineered a lot of weapons, and they do provide and supply Russia and other countries with drones and things like that. But yeah, the Russians, especially the Russians, have used up their goodwill in Syria and in northern Iraq. They really have upset a lot of people. And so I don't think you'll see a lot of Arab countries crying for the fact that Russia has been forced out, and they won't be in the area anymore.
Yeah. Final thoughts?
It's going to be, as a former intel guy, it's going to be very interesting to see what path Iran takes. If I was presenting to a commander, I would say that the regime is in survival mode right now. They want to salvage what they can. And while they may strike U.S. forces or Israel, they're going to be limited strikes, again, to save face. And they're going to get back to the table, and they're going to try to negotiate. Now, where the negotiations go, and what the Israelis and the U.S. demands, and what Iran is willing to give up, that's going to be the next chapter. It's going to be very interesting to see.
I doubt that we get to an unconditional surrender, because that weakens the regime, and they just can't handle the PR of an unconditional surrender within the territorial confines of Iran. It's a very tenuous situation that's going on there now, right?
Yes, and I was talking to somebody the other day, and especially the young population in Iran, they don't know anything different than a theocracy, because they weren't around, obviously, before 1979. And I think the factors that caused the 1979 revolution aren't there anymore. A lot of younger people want freedom. They don't want to live under a theocracy. And Iran is a very rich country, but they've been using this money to develop these weapon systems, to try to develop a nuclear weapon. They've been using this money to prop up proxies in the Middle East and other places. And I think that people are getting tired. I mean, there have been revolutions that have popped up over the last few years. And while the U.S., I think, officially is saying that, we're not trying to do a regime change, Israel would probably love it. But again, being Mr. Doom and Gloom, what's next after that? Who's going to come in and fill in that power vacuum? The Shah's son has been making a lot of pleas to the Iranian citizens about bringing him back or having him come back. So a lot of unknowns, but it's going to be interesting. And as somebody who's been watching this for a long, long time, I hope the Iranian people are able to decide what kind of government they want and throw off what they've had or what they have currently.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll have to, like everyone else, wait and see. Everything else is conjecture, especially when it comes to intent. Who knows what lurks in the mind of Khamenei by any stretch of the imagination. So that's a scary proposition in and of itself. Dr. Michael Wallace, 20-year Navy veteran, counterterrorism expert at Tulane, professor at Tulane as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate your insight and your time.
And thank you. I enjoyed this.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jeweler Talk and text line. Stay with us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.